Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host, Tom Wheeler, Executive Director of Epic, and I'm joined by my friends, Alicia Heyman of Friends of the Yellow River. How are you?
Hey, Tom. I'm doing pretty good.
All right. And Jen Colt, Director of Humble Baykeeper. Hey, Jen, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm working extra remotely. I'm now at my parents' place in Washington State.
Oh.
I figured since we're all working remotely, I might as well go hang out with the parents for a little while. And we are going to talk today with Griff, the ever-famous naturalist at Humboldt Redwood State Park. Hey, Griff, how are you?
I'm doing very good. I'm out here in the old-growth redwoods as we speak, feeling blessed.
So we're doing this all by Zoom, and I think that most people, when you see old-growth behind them on a Zoom call, you know, it's that fake digital background that is imposed. But Griff is really out there in the redwoods, so this is going to be our coolest call yet. And his background is a lot better than mine. You know, I'm just in the home office. Jealous. All right. So Griff, let's get a little bit of a background for you. And I think that folks are probably going to be familiar with you because they may have watched some of your show or follow you on Facebook or maybe saw you on Ellen. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am a lifelong wildlife conservationist, thanks to my grandmother and my mother, who took me outside a lot when I was a kid. My earliest memories are going out with my grandma and believing that she had superpowers to call toads. And I wanted those superpowers. And so I was apprenticed under her, exploring nature, her and my mother. Can't call toads still yet, but I've dedicated my life to wildlife conservation and trying to connect people with the outdoors. And so I feel really blessed to do it, especially from a place like Humboldt Redwood State Parks, which is the most beautiful place in the world.
You're here.
So, John, you're living there at the park, is that right?
Yes. It's a dream come true. I've been really fortunate. I grew up in the city, and I don't do well in cities. I would stay outside in nature and be off the grid in a place like Humboldt Redwood State Parks or Salmon River, which I also lived, Klamath National Forest, where I lived all over that area. And I would love just to be in a beautiful place like that and never have to go to town. But unfortunately, with reality, and you guys know this very well, is we have to engage people to protect nature. So I figured this was the best spot for me in Humboldt Redwood State Park because I love the redwoods and I love the Yellow River. And Alicia, I was on the board of Friends of the Yellow River for a few years.
Awesome. Just,
I love the Yellow River. And so to be here, I'm literally, the Yellow River is like right there, like 50 yards away from me. So to be here and to live here and then get to engage people about this beautiful place and talk about conservation, it's truly a blessing. I feel so, so, so blessed to be here.
How's the Yellow River looking, John, right now? I haven't seen it in a while, except in pictures on Facebook and stuff.
Oh, the rain was like a facelift. It's like beautiful. And also there was that nice weather we had right before it started raining and people came down and they walked all over my animal tracks. And I was really getting in it to track, you know, it was like following Kim Cabrera, the bear tracker. She's local. And I was learning tracks from some of her posts, and this rain has brought the river up and it's got a whole new fresh sand out there. So I'm looking forward to going down there and checking out the tracks. The river looks wonderful.
What kind of animals are you tracking right now?
Mountain lions. I found mountain lion tracks the other day, which was wonderful because they were so perfect. Otters, porcupine tracks, which were really difficult for me to, I'm not a great tracker. So I actually was signed up for a tracking class this spring that got canceled because of the pandemic. But I'm like basic tracker. I'm trying to learn, and especially here because there's so many opportunities to see tracks. So next summer, if you come visit me as a naturalist for working for state parks, I will take you tracking. I will teach you tracking. I'm going to have it down by then.
Any tools you use to improve your tracking skills that you'd recommend for others?
To get to make casts. So get some plaster of Paris and then like cut a yogurt container. So you get that circle and then you can make different sizes depending on the yogurt container. And then you can put that around the track and then you can make casts and then you can look them up. I usually cheat and I just like ask Kim Cabrera, put it on iNaturalist and then she usually identifies it for me. And then I look it up in the book. But I make casts once in a while too. So I plan to make a bunch because we have a collection of them in the park. So I'm on the hunt for good tracks all the time.
That's awesome. One of my memories from my youth is making a plaster cast of a raccoon print at Girl Scout camp in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. It is really cool.
So, John, I'm really curious. So I know you from your days with the California Conservation Corps, and you would bring in your crew members to the Baykeeper office, and we'd talk about, you know, stormwater pollution and water quality and all this kind of stuff. But I'm really curious, how did you end up at Humboldt Redwood State Park? Because I haven't talked to you in a while, actually. So I don't know how and why you made that transition. And really, what is your job under normal, non-pandemic circumstances? What do you do on a normal day?
Well, you know, I have gone back and forth from the CCC and state parks. I actually was I was on a trail crew for state parks when I was 26 and 27. And I also did restoration from the Clausen bypass, the bypass around Newtby Drury, around Prairie Creek. And so, and it ended up like causing all these landslides that greatly compromised a lot of those really nice streams in there. So I worked on restoration there for state parks, and I did trails. And then in the CCC, I've done salmon habitat restoration. I've done prairie restoration. I've done trails in state parks. So I've always had a pretty close relationship with state parks. And I've always wanted to be an interpreter. I actually went to HSU to be an interpreter, studied interpretation after my plant science degree. But because of the budgets and stuff, they weren't hiring interpreters. And I wanted to be an interpreter in Humboldt Redwood State Park, you know, 20 some years ago. And they just finally flew the interpreter position last year for Humboldt Redwood State Park. So I waited 20 years for this job to come open. Not that I feel like I wasted a second in the CCC. The CCC was, it's a sacred job. I loved it. I loved it. The day I left, I loved it. But I'm 50 now, and it's really hard to hit the ground with a stick for 10 hours a day and sleep in a tent for, you know, 8 days, 6 days off, 8 days. And so my body was just like, maybe you should use your education now.
I feel ya.
So, if I had, you know, like Wolverine X-Men powers, I would do the CCC for the rest of my life. But this was my original dream job, and it feels like it. So right now with the pandemic, it's all different, and we can talk about that in a minute. But what I normally would be doing is campfire programs, taking people for walks, taking field trips with students, that kind of stuff. You know, my philosophy for being an interpreter, being a nature guide, naturalist, is that I don't want people to come here and have a terminal experience or a transactional experience. I want people to do more than just come here and get a picture by a redwood. I want them to imagine wilderness, or at least ecological processes and wildlife corridors and rewilding in their yards and in their, you know, places of worships and in their workplaces. I want them to want to recreate the park at their home, wherever they live, like with the plants that are native to their area. And so that's kind of what I'm going to do with this job, is I want to plant seeds in people to want to recreate natural areas and corridors and help wildlife at their home, and to get inspired, to come here and get inspired. This is like coming to church for religious people. You know, you go to church and you get all inspired and you sing the songs and you get all hyped up and you go home and make some stuff happen. And that's kind of how I see the parks and my role in the parks.
You spoke before about being a city kid and, you know, not wanting to go back to that and wanting to spend your time in nature. Is there any way that you reach out to other city kids who maybe haven't had those same opportunities, or are there programs you work with to, you know, kind of reach those youth that are trapped up in the concrete jungle?
That was a strong attraction to the CCC. The CCC rescued me. I ran away from home when I was 15. I dropped out of high school. I had a serious bad boy problem, drugs, alcohol, just anger. And I spent a lot of times cutting school and like roaming, you know, San Francisco and Oakland and just getting involved in a lot of bad stuff. And I always wanted to be in nature. I always, you know, I spent summers at relatives' houses that lived rural. And I knew for me and my personality type and maybe my emotional intelligence level that it was probably best for me to get the constant therapy of nature and being outside. And I was right. I joined the CCC. The CCC was, talk about transformational. I got off drugs. I got my GED. I got inspired to want to study nature in school, ecology, plant science. And it just transformed me. And it, like, I had terrible relationships with my family because, you know, running away from home and doing drugs and all kinds. My dad was a cop. So, you know, the whole teenage son doing drugs in your house didn't work very well for him. And so I needed healing. And the California Conservation Corps gave me that when I was 18 years old. And so I wanted to give back to the CCC because I know it works. It works. It takes people from distressed communities and sometimes, you know, college students, but like for the people that are from distressed communities and distressed situations like I was, it's super healing and nature is super healing. And it was really good for me. And so like, I've never gone back to the city. I mean, I've gone back to like to the airport or whatever, visit a friend, but I don't ever want to live in an urban environment anymore. It's just not for me, but I love people in urban areas to come up and see me and learn about how they can bring nature to their doorsteps, even in the middle of the city. So today, that's kind of what I focus on. It used to be me mentoring youth, 18, 25 year olds for the last 18, 19 years. And now it's, I guess, a less succinct way to explain it is to like, I really like to champion Doug Ptolemy for bringing nature homes message and just helping people to like if you can't rewild your spirit by being in the wild, then you can rewild, you know, your urban spaces. And so that's kind of how I see my role now.
Yeah, totally. Well, I guess does the state park system have any relationships with like programs like Latino Outdoors or Outdoor Afro or any of those kinds of organizations?
Yes. Well, Rue and Jose are friends of mine. They've both were super supportive of the CCC. Jose used to even drove like hours out of his way one time to visit my crew in a camp and gave us one of the most amazing talks and like it would talk about transformational. Jose Gonzalez is amazing. He's the founder of Latino Outdoors. He was on our California State Parks Interp Tech diversity panel last week as well. But he came out and told my core members, when you are challenged and you're not sure what to do, ask yourself, how would the person I want to be handle this? And the core members that were there for that talk, you know, then that was a few years ago. We still bring that up to each other about how that was one of the best things that was ever said to us, you know, around a campfire in the middle of the Redwoods. So yes, we're meeting with Latino Outdoors. A couple of the Latino Outdoor leaders from Southern California have come up and I've taken them on hikes to the Laura Mahan Grove because Laura Mahan is my hero. So if you ever want to come for walks with me, I'll take you out to her plaque because if you don't know about Laura Mahan, you should. And then Outdoor Afro, yes, I'm always involved with Outdoor Afro. RUMAP is a friend / mentor of mine, and she's also on a state parks and rec commissioner. So yeah, we're going to have a very cozy relationship with them. And my boss has already met with Latino Outdoors, and we love their mission, and we want to support them any way we can.
Well, one of the things I've heard you say, Griff, is that it really struck you in the early days of your time in Humboldt, really, during Redwood Summer and stuff, that you came here and you said to yourself, you know, if everybody in your movement is white and gray, your movement has an expiration date. That's something that, I mean, I'm a little bit older than you, and I look around a lot of times, and except for Tom and Alicia here, I'm one of the younger people in this movement oftentimes. And, you know, I've been thinking a lot about that with the pandemic and how suddenly all these things are much more accessible as far as like public hearings or talks at the local Audubon or Native Plant Society are getting hundreds of people instead of 30 or 40 because people can do it while, you know, their kids are getting ready for bed or they're making dinner. And so, you know, I've been thinking about how are these things we're living through in the last 60 days or so here going to maybe stick around and make things a little bit more accessible for regular people and younger people so that we're not looking at a movement with an expiration date.
Yeah. And that should be for conservationists, people who love nature and endangered species. Like, and a lot of times they wonder, like, why should diversity and inclusion be a priority? It should absolutely be a priority because, and you know, let me just say this to the listeners who are like, there's a lot of people who have like misconceptions of what the diversity movement is, diversity inclusion movement. It's not about kicking white people out of chairs. They can be filled with brown people. That's not what diversity inclusion is. It's about adding more chairs, getting a bigger room. Okay. That's what diversity inclusion is. And so, and it's more important than ever. And, you know, a lot of the times it's a lot easier than people think. It's just about getting out of our own way. Like we often superimpose how we experience nature on other people. And as conservationists, people who love endangered species, people who love habitat, wildlife habitat, we really got to find out how other people, like how we can connect to other people and get them interested, you know, meet them where they're at, get the people what they want, you know. And so that might look different than how you spend time in nature or how you talk about conservation. And I think it's important for us, you know, all of us who are interested in saving wildlife to quickly learn this lesson and quickly add more chairs and get a bigger room and start inviting people.
And we're talking with a naturalist, Griff, from Humboldt Redwood State Park, about his work there at the park and about how to make the environmental movement a more inclusive movement, how to broaden the environmental movement.
Yeah, one of the things that really strikes me is it's becoming more common to see people walking around with devices that are playing music outdoors on trails.
Yeah.
And I used to do that a lot as a teenager, right? We would walk around with, we call them a ghetto blaster. You know, people would walk around with those things or put them on the handles of your bike or whatever. And people are starting to do that again. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people in the conservation movement don't like that. They think like I'm out here in nature and I'm here to hear the birds and the bees and the wind and stuff. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people really enjoy being out in nature with a big group of people playing music, having a good time. And that's, you know, can be a cultural thing, or it can be maybe even an age thing. Like the older you get, the more stressed out you are about daily life. So you want peace and quiet, you know, but, you know, just learning how to love nature in all the different ways everybody does, not just the way I do.
Yeah. And you know, one of the ways we can look to solving that is like, yeah, there's people who want to go out in bigger groups. You know, there's some cultures that don't go with a nuclear family out into nature. They take grandma and grandpa and aunt, uncle and cousins, and they go in big groups. And I think that just means we need to save more areas, save more land so that we can have, you know, areas for different things. We can have the area for loud music and playing. We can have the area for just hearing wildlife sounds. I think that's how we should look at it, is that there's going to be different areas that have, you know, different themes, if you will.
As long as we keep the mobile homes with the generators far away from me, that sounds great.
Yeah, you know, sometimes I'm out here, like I'm right next to Avenue of the Giants. And sometimes I'm out here and, you know, with the pandemic, where I'm at right now would normally have tons and tons of people on it. I wouldn't be able to do the Zoom call in peace. But because of, you know, COVID, it's really quiet right here. And that's why I spend a lot of time in this grove, because I feel like I'm probably going to avoid it outside of work once people come back. But one of the things is that when motorcycles come down the Avenue of the Giant, it's amazing. It just rips the peace and quiet out here. And I started getting mad about that once in a while. And my mom, who's a motorcycle mama, told me, she's like, would you rather those people not come to the Redwoods? Or like, what are you doing? And I'm like, no, it's not that. It's not that. You know, there's a bunch of people and they all come outside differently. And I think that if someone comes out in the Redwoods and they jog the trail with music on, at least they're out here. It's a start, because I want them to fall in love with this place. I want people to fall in love with, you know, what made this track. I mean, even if it's a start, you know, for me, it's a start. The way that we're going to save nature is not by making it a private club for an exclusive group of intellectuals. The way that we're going to save nature is that everybody, as many people as possible, have a relationship with it, and a healthy relationship. And that healthy relationship for them might look different than the healthy relationship that we have with nature. And so we really have to get out of our own way and make sure that we have as many people having a bond with a giant redwood tree or an otter track or a salamander. Like, they have to connect. We are not going to say this by ourselves. One of the most notorious, I guess, things I've ever been quoted on is after that dance video went viral, ABC and Univision, they interviewed me and I said, white people aren't going to save the planet. And it kind of shocked people. But, you know, more specific, what I meant was, when going back to something you said earlier, Jen, when that group that I saw when I was 18, 19 years old, that was all white and gray, that was in Arcata. And I go back to that group sometimes and it's still white and gray. It's the same people there. And God bless them. They are champions. And I love them. They're my heroes. They're my mentors, everything. The one thing that we're missing is younger people in that group and diversity in that group. And I think it's because a lot of people don't know how to do it. And also we kind of like the conservation we inherited was racist. I mean, the founders of the Save the Redwood Leagues were eugenicists, okay? And Save the Redwood League is wonderful, and I love them. They're one of my favorite groups, and they are way beyond that history now. And they're all about diversity, and they just did a film with Teresa Baker, a friend of mine from African American National Park event. But they were founded by eugenicists. This park, the state park system, was founded by eugenicists. And so we have this inheritance as conservationists of having this like white exclusive upper class intellectual underlying in some of our conservation culture. Not everybody today, of course. But there is that. And I've seen it, and I've seen it going away really, really fast, because conservationists are no dummies. And we've been making the transition really well recently. And I totally appreciate that. I'm cheering that on. But we still have a long way to go.
So you mentioned that these, you know, really dedicated old timers, they just don't know how to do it, as in they don't know how to, you know, expand their movement and make it more diverse. And one thing that I hear a lot sitting around those tables is, well, how do we get, you know, more diverse people, younger people involved in what we're doing? And my instinct tells me that there are people out there that are doing things, and maybe it's less about asking them to be a part of what we're already doing and maybe joining what they're doing.
Good call.
Do you have thoughts about like how to bridge that?
Yes. You know, the best way is to call and ask. So I know you guys have interviewed Latino Outdoors leaders before on this podcast. Yeah, so good. You guys are doing awesome. So like asking, like, how can we help you? How can we join? what, you know, help us understand this, like go in real humble and just be like, we know we need to do this, but we don't have a clue. Can you help us? Like, we're trying, we don't want to put our foot in our mouth, whatever. We know we're going to put our foot in our mouth and we're ready for that, you know, and just like ask and start to find out. And that's the best way to proceed, is to start asking questions, you know, start, you know, inviting people to the table and being like, we want to do this. How should we do this? What is your recommendation? Or how can we support you? Like, what kind of support do you need? So, and a lot of people in Latino Outdoors locally are in college and they need jobs, you know? So it's like, they need stuff like that. You know, they're students. And so, you know, maybe going and speaking to the group about job opportunities that you have and stuff like that also would be a good way to just start building a relationship.
Yeah, one thing that Humboldt Baykeepers Bay Tours coordinator Jasmine Segura has found is, instead of inviting people to come to our events, we go to their events. And yeah, that's, you know, if you want to get involved with figuring out what high school students are into, figure out an event that they're having and just go and see what it's like and check it out and maybe talk to people and ask them what they think.
Yeah. Excellent. That's exactly the kind of stuff we could be doing. And, you know, just if people are looking to engage a diverse group of audience at their events locally here, I would encourage them to call the California Conservation Corps. The California Conservation Corps, core members look like Californians, and so they look like everybody. And so that would be a really good way to start learning this relationship. And a lot of the folks in the California Conservation Corps, they're from somewhere else. And so they're looking for experiences, you know, they're adventurers. And so engaging them on as much as possible, if environmental groups engage them as much as possible, that would be really helpful for the group to learn how to diversify and for the kids that are looking for, young adults that are looking for experiences in the conservation movement.
So John, you mentioned Save the Redwoods League, and Humboldt Redwood State Park is coming up on its 100th anniversary next year. Yeah. Do you want to talk a little bit about the founding of it and the 100-year celebration?
Well, I just want to, I'm super excited about it. It's our 100-year anniversary. And people, even local people, even myself, like, I didn't know what a gem this park was on so many different levels. Like, I knew ecologically it was this, you know, one of the greatest places on the planet. But I didn't know all the cultural things that are tied to this. The land conservancy movement started here. So Save the Redwood League started that, like, land trust movement here through their memorial program. So that's one. This is like the epicenter of that. This is also the epicenter of the state park system. So there was a couple state parks, but there wasn't a state park system. The reason why the state park system started is because Newton B. Drury and some of the founders that were still alive at that time, wanted to match Rockefeller's funds to buy Bull Creek Flats, which John Muir called one of the best examples of a forest on the planet. And so that Bull Creek Flat is what inspired a state park system, because they were trying to find a workaround on how to acquire this property from a very uncooperative PL. PL was uncooperative even back in the teens and 20s. Isn't that interesting? So anyways, that started there. Also, the founders were eugenicists, which is also really bizarre about how that came up and why. Because they saw the redwood trees as the supreme tree, if you will. Okay. There's a lot of interesting things that have their start in Humboldt Redwood, especially tactics. Like if you knew the political tactics that the State of the Redwood League did in the 20s, it's amazing. Newton B. Drury went on to be the Secretary of Interior. One of the Secretaries of Interior was the first director of Save the Redwood League. I mean, they had very, very, very high level political connections. They used them. They used on the ground political actions that were foreign at that time, brand new at that time, which are regular for us. They were started right here. Laura Mahan, the women, is actually, Save the Redwood League did a lot for the Redwoods, but really it was Eureka Women that saved the Redwoods. Laura Mahan started the Women's Save the Redwood League. And they did on-the-ground actions. They raised tons of money. They did the first land donations, where women's group members did the first land donations, which created Humboldt Redwood State Parks. It started with them. And Laura Mahan may be the first non-Indigenous person to have ever done civil disobedience, forced action civil disobedience. So Humboldt County really is the beginning of civil disobedience to save the woods, because Laura Mahan did it a couple years after women got the right to vote in out there by Founders Grove, in her grove, the Mahan Plaque Loop Grove. And her plaque is right by some of the trees that were cut down before she went out there and put herself between the tree and the saws. So this place is an epicenter. It's like a mecca of so many different conservation movements and strategies and women's rights movements. Like, the first two, the Women's Federation of the I get really excited about this, so I'm sorry if I'm doing too much. But the California Federation of Women's Groups made education and forestry their first two issues. Okay. So women's groups, a lot of people don't know that women's groups weren't about just voting. They were about forestry. That was one of the main political things, because women weren't allowed to exercise their power on things that were directly economic at that time still. So they found forestry. And so the Save the Redwoods movement was largely powered and populated by women's groups. It's fascinating history. And I'm going to talk all about it in 2021. Pretty much every program and hike I do is going to be focused on that kind of stuff.
Well, and that's a good segue to talk about your Facebook Live sessions that you've been doing.
Yes.
You want to talk about that a little bit? And
so with the pandemic, people can't come out to the park, but it's still their park, and we still want them to enjoy it. And we still want them to start having some transformational experiences. So every day on our North Coast Redwood, California State Park, North Coast Redwoods Facebook page, at 3 o'clock, someone does a Facebook Live. So sometimes it's from one of the interpreters throughout the Yurok Village, and they're Yurok interpreters, and they're talking about Sumeg Village, or Skip comes out with me on Sundays. And this last Sunday, we talked about the Endangered Species Act. It was Endangered Species Day. Well, it was a couple days after. And so he told a story, a Yurok story that helped us learn the right attitude for dealing with endangered species and each other. So we do these at 3:00. And then on my Humboldt Redwood State Park page at 3:30 on Fridays and Sundays, I do Facebook Lives. And they've been really well received, because a lot of people are stuck at home. And so it's a good way for them to kind of like live vicariously through the camera and see if the Redwoods are still out here doing well, you know, and that there's all kinds of interesting things to discover.
For example, the question of what good ticks could possibly be.
I know, you know, in the CCC, I always got that question, what good are this or what good are that? And it, you know, like the first thing comes to my mind is like, what good are humans and blah, blah, blah. You know, and I'm like, how dare you ask that question? Like, part of me is there. But that is a great question. And people should always feel free to ask me that question. So someone asked me, a guy named Travis on Facebook Live, he's like, yeah, I saw your, you know, on Bumblebees. That was cool. But what good are ticks? And so I've been bit by a tick. I've had tick pull out of all the wrong places. I can't stand ticks. They're very much part of my adulthood working in the woods. I've had many, many ticks. And I've learned to keep them off me pretty well. But I did some research and I found out that there's a piece of amber, a fossilized piece of amber with a dinosaur feather in it from a dinosaur that was the size of a hummingbird and a tick. So there was ticks were on dinosaurs, it looks very much like. I didn't know they were around that long. Ticks predate redwood trees. So the more I dug into ticks, the more I appreciate them. So I actually like had one yesterday and I watched it up close and I watched it clean itself and stuff. And I actually kind of had like a, oh, poor little tick feeling for a while.
Until you smashed it.
And then I was like, you got to go someplace where I'll never see you again. Yeah. But yeah, they're interesting animals. If people want to follow me, they can follow me at Griff Wild on Facebook or at The Nature Nut on Instagram, and visit the state park pages, North Coast Redwoods and Humboldt Redwoods State Parks. We do lives every day at 3:00 on North Coast Redwoods and 3:30 Fridays and Sundays on the Humboldt Redwoods State Park Facebook page.
All right. And we'll put links to that in the show notes.
Awesome.
Lost Coast Outpost. Well, thanks, Griff.
Yeah, thank you guys. Thank you for all your work, and thank you for giving voices to people in the local area to talk about their missions. I really appreciate that.
Well, it's good to see you. I'd love to go on a tour of the Laura Mahan Grove. That sounds like a fun time. I'll take you up on that offer.
It's on. All awesome.
Right. Cool, dude.
Before we end, just one thing. We try to promote these shows by creating little graphics and posting about them and stuff. So I've taken a couple of screenshots, Griff, while you've been talking. And I thought maybe we could use one of those.
Yeah.
So I'll send them around by email just so you can like thumbs up or thumbs down if you're doing a weird face or something.
Okay. I like I'm always doing a weird face. But yeah, okay.
Sounds good. Thanks, Alicia.
All right. So good to see you, Griff. Enjoy the Redwoods.
Yeah. All right. Awesome. Thank you.
All right. Have a good one, all.
See you too. Bye.
All right. That's been another episode of the Eco News Report. Thank you very much to Griff for joining us. Check out his Facebook page. Go to Humboldt Redwood State Park and look for their 3 p.m. naturalist series. That sounds pretty cool. And join us again next week on this time and channel for more environmental news from the North Coast of California. Thanks, all. Wash your hands and be safe.